It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. We are your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have fair skies and 49 degrees. Out at the airport, they are showing east winds at 3 miles per hour, and they have a full 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for a 10% chance of showers after 4 p.m., otherwise partly sunny for the rest of the day with a high near 54, south winds to 10. A slight chance of showers this evening until 7, followed by a slight chance of showers after 4 a.m., otherwise mostly cloudy overnight with a low of 40, south winds to 5, becoming completely calm after midnight. And partly sunny skies tomorrow, too, although with a 30% chance of rain after 4 p.m. tomorrow, too. Coming up on the Midday Report, Anchorage is ready to open up enough shelter beds for everyone living outdoors in the city. And Anchorage police say they will finally begin outfitting officers with body cameras. And the Kenai Peninsula is getting a crash course on school budgeting.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. President Biden is weighing in on the prospects of House Republicans choosing a new speaker who's more of a conservative hardliner than ousted Speaker Kevin McCarthy. As NPR's Tamara Keith reports, former President Trump has endorsed Judiciary Committee Chair Jim Jordan, a Republican from Ohio.
Jordan has been one of the lead House investigators trying to dig up evidence of wrongdoing by President Biden, his son, and the Justice Department. Biden was asked if he could work with him.
For some people, I imagine it could be easier to work with than others. But whoever the speaker is, I'll try to work with.
In remarks celebrating another good jobs report, Biden called for Congress to get back to work on passing a budget. The current temporary spending measure expires in mid-November. And at the moment, the House is at a standstill as Republicans try to choose a new speaker. Tamara Keith, NPR News at the White House.
And in that jobs report, the Labor Department says employers added 336,000 jobs in September, surprising economists. The unemployment rate held steady at 3.8%. The co-founder of disgraced crypto mogul Sam Bankman-Fried's companies testified against him at trial today. As NPR's David Gura reports, Gary Wong says he was part of a conspiracy to defraud customers and investors.
Jurors are hearing from former members of Sam Bankman-Fried's inner circle. Gary Wong was Bankman-Fried's friend at Math Camp and then MIT. The two of them co-founded FTX and Alameda Research, a crypto hedge fund. And in his testimony, Wong detailed how he made changes to the computer code underpinning FTX to allow that hedge fund to take billions of dollars in FTX customer money. Wong has pleaded guilty to criminal fraud charges and has a cooperation agreement. Prosecutors say Caroline Ellison, who ran Alameda and was Bankman-Fried's on-again, off-again girlfriend, will testify on Tuesday when the trial resumes. David Gura, NPR News, outside U.S. District Court in Lower Manhattan.
The United Auto Workers Union says it won't expand strikes at Detroit's Big Three automakers for now. This amid progress in contract talks, including General Motors agreeing to cover electric vehicle battery workers under the contract. UAW head Sean Fain.
We were about to shut down GM's largest moneymaker in Arlington, Texas. The company knew those members were ready to walk immediately. And just that threat has provided a transformative win. GM has now agreed in writing to place their electric battery manufacturing under our National Master Agreement.
That's a significant concession for GM, given that automakers have been reluctant to include EV battery plants, which are critical in the transition to an electric future in these talks. Preliminary closing numbers on Wall Street, the Dow is up 288 points, the Nasdaq up 211. This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Within a few weeks, Anchorage is poised to open up more shelter beds than there are people living outdoors in the city. These beds are supposed to be a stepping stone towards stability. But as Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports, the path out of homelessness is precarious and rarely straight.
A worker with Rent-A-Can is hauling away hand washing stations from an unofficial homeless campground along 3rd Avenue in Anchorage. They don't work in freezing temperatures. The porta-potties will be going soon, too. By the end of the month, the city aims to clear the entire encampment, vehicles, tents, and campers. Marie Nikolai says she's been living here since the city shut down its mass shelter at the Sullivan Arena at the end of last winter.
And I'm now residing in this tent.
She shares it with 3 other people. She's layered up with hoodies and jackets and says she's ready to be warm indoors. The city is aiming to open hotel rooms with beds for 372 people on October 15th.
I'll be down there right away.
But for now, she's still camping. Within minutes, Nikolai is crying and despairing, laughing and optimistic. These ups and downs are constant from moment to moment and day to day.
Living homeless, living like this, I made me sad every day, but I just say thank you, Father God, for another day.
Afternoon shadows are stretching out across the vacant lot. Outreach workers are packing up their folding tables and pop-up tents for the day. One longtime worker spots her crying.
Well, I thank you for being Marie.
So yes.
You make my day when I see you.
I know you make my day. Love you.
I love you too.
A series of wins, like having a hot meal, getting a free smartphone and service, nailing down eligibility paperwork for welfare programs, can all be undone by a bad choice, a bad actor, or bad luck. Nearby, Brian Sharp is sitting on the ground under a blanket, keeping watch over his friend's tent. His lip, nose, and forehead are bruised and scraped.
I bounced off the curb, and I didn't know it, but I had a seizure yesterday and didn't even know it.
He says during an ambulance trip recently, he lost a backpack with his wallet, phone, and medical paperwork.
And now I got to start all over again because nobody believes the doctor diagnosed me disabled.
He doesn't know where he'll sleep tonight. Other people have been using cars as shelter. They learned at the end of September they'll be impounded if they aren't moved. Ronald Colson has been living out of an RV here since April. He is also at the top of the city's list of serial offenders for traffic violations and unpaid fines. He doesn't have a valid license.
I don't really have any place to park anything or any of my vehicles. I'm trying to figure out how in the world I can do it. I don't know. I don't want to lose my motorhome. That's the only place I got to live now. And, I'm just stuck.
Arthur Warren has been living out of a car here for a few days. He lost his house in Palmer to a fire in 2018. He's been in and out of housing, temporary shelters, cars, and tents since. In just the last week of September, Warren says he was evicted from low-income housing, given a car to sleep in, and served with an impound notice. In winters past, he lost 2 toes to frostbite and gangrene.
So I want to head south before the winter hits. I don't think my feet will hold up. I think they're going to have to cut my feet off.
He's not sure what's next, but he knows he has to get out of the cold. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Anchorage police say they will begin outfitting officers with body cameras in mid-November. During an Assembly Public Safety Committee meeting this week, Police Chief Michael Curl said the department has already received some of the equipment after signing a contract with Axon Enterprise last month.
We've received 16 pallets worth of equipment, which includes body-worn cameras and the in-car video systems. We expect to get more in there.
The implementation of the cameras comes 2.5 years after Anchorage voters approved a $1.8 million tax increase to purchase the equipment. The lengthy timeline stemmed in part from disagreements between the police department and union over the policy. And in April, the Alaska Black Caucus sued the city over the delays. Curl says representatives from Axon will come to Anchorage the week of November 13th to begin training officers on how to use the cameras as the department upgrades police vehicles' video systems. He says they hope to get 30 vehicles outfitted by the end of November.
As the vehicles are outfitted with the in-car video system, officers will be given the body cameras, and there will be continuous implementation until all 350 body cameras are on the street.
Curl says the body cameras will be linked to the in-car systems, automatically turning on when lights and sirens go off to respond to a call. The Kenai is getting a crash course in local economics, thanks to an effort from the School District's Board of Education to help the public better understand school district budgeting. KDLL's Riley Board has more on the series.
KPBSD's Budget 101 series arose after public protests during last year's budget process, when the district considered cuts to services like pools and theaters while facing a deficit. The series kicked off in September with a lesson on the state funding formula. The district's finance director, Liz Hayes, hosted the conversation.
70% of our general fund budget comes from the state of Alaska.
She explained that funding is calculated through a formula fueled by the number of total students, which is counted over a 20-day period in October. Then the formula makes adjustments based on factors like the sizes of schools and something called the district cost factor, which accounts for varying education costs across the state with Anchorage as a baseline.
So several years ago, they did a study in the state of Alaska and found out that, well, I think everybody knew this, but they acknowledged it at the state level, that it costs a different amount of money to educate students in different regions of Alaska.
That's followed by a special education factor, then a vocational education factor. Then there's additional money for intensive needs students, followed by an adjustment for homeschool students, which slightly decreases the district's funding. That final number is multiplied by the base student allocation, or the amount of money the state allocates per student.
So you're going to times that, and you're going to come up with $102,661,775. That's what the state considers the basic need for this district.
But that number, Hayes said, isn't exactly what KPBSD will get from the state. A percentage of that money must come from the borough, and that portion is based on assessed property tax value. The borough can choose how much to fund within a range, with a maximum amount which it elected to provide this fiscal year. Hayes warned that barring changes in the BSA or funding from the state legislature, the district will come up short of what it needs next year.
So right out of the gate, starting for our FY25 school year, we will be facing a minimum of a $13 million deficit.
Board members discussed that process and talked about keeping cuts away from the classroom as much as possible. East Peninsula board member Virginia Morgan asked the public to be understanding of the pressures on the district.
I hope the public understands this and understands that this is no scare tactics, that the board is trying to cut the popular programs to get people out. This is just the reality because of the timeline and what the current decisions are of our legislature. And so we're going to be looking at some really scary cuts very soon.
This month, Hayes presented about in-kind services with the help of Borough Finance Director Brandy Harbaugh. Harbaugh explained that these services, which the borough pays for on behalf of the district, include maintenance, insurance, an annual audit, custodial services, and utilities. That money comes out of the same pot as the borough's general contribution to the district. Harbaugh walked the board through the process.
Of the 54.7, approximately $40 million is provided to the school district in cash. So we cut it up into 12 pieces and we cut the school district a check. You know, we would cut the check, but we push it to the ledger once a month. And so that cash is then accepted into pay wages and programs and utilities and things like that at the school district. Then beyond that, these other five components are also a portion of that 54.7. We're really only cutting a check to the school district for the $40 million, and the rest of it we're paying for it directly on behalf of.
There are two more Budget 101 events. In November, the district will tackle the fund balance and the district savings account. Then the series will wrap up in December with a discussion of the chart of accounts, or how the district tracks and reports its spending. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
Marching bands are a staple at high school and college football games across the lower 48. In Alaska, though, only a few schools have them, mostly in the Mat-Su borough. But in the last few years, at least two schools outside the Mat-Su have started marching bands. As Alaska Public Media's Tim Rocky reports, enthusiasts hope it's just the beginning of a marching band renaissance in Alaska.
It's tied 6-6 at halftime during a recent football game in Anchorage between Betty Davis East High and rival Bartlett. The temperature is starting to drop, but the T-Bird marching band is just warming up. Luke Emerson has been in the band program at East since he started high school. When the school started offering marching band last year, Emerson reluctantly joined. Now, he conducts the marching band as the drum major and hopes to keep marching in college next year.
I never first intended to, like, march at all, but I've really loved it, and it's just a ton of fun, and I definitely want to continue doing it.
East was one of five bands that competed in Colony High's Marching Band Invitational last month, tying a record for the number of bands participating. Colony has had a marching band for nearly 20 years, and even performed at the Rose Bowl in 2018, but other schools in the state have been slow to follow suit. Instruments and uniforms are expensive, and convincing high school students to walk and play at the same time when it's cold outside can be a daunting task.
They may not start super excited, but once they get started and they're on the field, there's that teamwork and the camaraderie.
Barb Carroll is the Assistant Director of Music for the Alaska School Activities Association and started a marching band at Palmer High when she taught there. She says part of the reason marching bands are catching on in Alaska is because music teachers with southern roots are moving to the state.
When you get them out to the football field, the fans love it. It's a whole new experience for the fans. It's a whole new experience for the kids. You know, Friday Night Lights isn't just about football. It's about band. It's about school spirit and school pride. And these marching bands are the epitome of school spirit, which is awesome.
Jamin Burton started Colony's marching band called The Northern Sound in 2005. And Burton says since then, Colony has mostly been a solo act. A former student of Burton's started the second marching band in the state at Houston in 2017, followed by Palmer, Reddington, and Wasilla the following year. Kenai Central High School added a marching band in 2021. East and Kenai are the first marching bands to get started recently outside of the Mat-Su School District. But Burton hopes they aren't the only ones to join the fun.
I think that we have shown that it's not too cold, it's not too wet, the geography is not too big. You can do it, you just have to want to do it bad enough. And you have to want to provide that opportunity for students and for kids to get that experience.
All right, the next song is going to be the fight song.
At halftime, the band lines up on the far side of the field and marches toward their home fans, playing a song called Aztec Fire. Francis Rojas is a junior at East, and he leads the marching band's alto saxophone section. He says it takes practice to play and move at the same time.
The hardest part was coming out and performing it, because like with the footwork and all that stuff, it's way harder than just playing it, you know, sitting down with your stand and playing it.
Rojas says that during the game, the band feeds off the energy from the football team, and vice versa.
I used to play football, so I see them, like, I know all of them. I see them as almost like my brothers, right? So whenever they go and score something, I get super hyped. I just start playing as loud as I can, playing as much as I can.
In the last minutes of the game, the band watches in horror as rival Bartlett marches down the field, seemingly toward victory. But a last-second interception seals the game for East. The crowd goes wild, and so does the band. In Anchorage, I'm Tim Rockins.
Consumers are feeling a bit better. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute. The University of Michigan reported today that consumer sentiment improved a bit at the end of this month. The index shows that consumers think inflation will average 3.2% over the next year. They're not too far off. The Commerce Department reported today the Core Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, the Federal Reserve's favorite measure of inflation, was up 3.9% in August from the same time last year. It had been stuck above 4%. Core PCE strips out volatile food and energy prices. Consumer spending rose 0.4% last month. That's not all back to school shopping, though. Much of the increase was driven by high gas prices. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute.
The Kodiak Arts Council welcomes rising four-piece Latinx fusion band Cuarteto Nuevo on their first tour to Alaska. Cuarteto Nuevo merges Western classical with Eastern European folk, Latin, and jazz with an organic feel that packs a wallop and engages audiences of all ages. The performance will be on Saturday, October 14th at 7:30 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. The Cuarteto Nuevo program was made possible with funding by the Rasmussen Foundation through the Harper Arts Touring Fund and is administered by the Alaska State Council of the Arts. More information and tickets are available at www.kodiakarts.org and at the box office an hour before the show.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the sixth day of October, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 8:24. It will set again at 7:29. That will give us 11 hours and 5 minutes of glorious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 61 degrees. That was set in 1915, then again in 1983. And our record low was 28. That was set in 1967 and in 2008. Currently 49 degrees under fair skies, a perfectly pleasant day. At the airport, they are showing east winds at 3 miles per hour, 83% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. The National Weather Service is calling for just a 10% chance of showers after 5 p.m. today, with partly sunny skies until then, and a high near 54, south winds to 10. Slight chance of showers tonight before 8, then a slight chance again after 5 a.m. Mostly cloudy overnight with a low of 40, south winds around 5, becoming completely calm after midnight. For tomorrow, a 30% chance of rain, mainly after 5 in the afternoon, but otherwise partly sunny skies tomorrow too, with a high near 52, and calm winds turning to the northwest to 5 tomorrow afternoon. Mostly sunny for Sunday, partly sunny for Columbus Day, and some mostly sunny conditions next week too. We still have an outgoing tide. Our low tide here on the east side will happen at 1:12 this afternoon and be 4.5 feet. Followed by a high tide at 7:31 of 7.5 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 1:42 this afternoon of 6.7 foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 7:50 p.m. of 10.9 feet. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory for today with 11-foot seas, south winds to 15, turning to variable 10 tonight, 7-foot seas tonight, variable 10 tomorrow with 6-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, south winds to 20 knots today and 4-foot seas, variable 10 tonight with 2-foot seas, and north 15 tomorrow with seas to 3 feet. There will be a celebration of life for Major Lola Davis. That's happening today at 5 p.m. at the Salvation Army Corps and Community Center. Again, that's Celebration of Life for Major Lola Davis. That's happening tonight at 5 p.m. at the Salvation Army Corps and Community Center. The children's movie Monsters vs. Aliens will be shown at the library at 3:30 p.m. today. That's an innocent-looking carved pumpkins reveal themselves to actually be mutant aliens. That's 3:30 p.m. Lots of fun for the kids. It is rated PG. Also happening tomorrow, Story Time with a Twist. It's Steam and a Story. Ms. Kate will read the book Maybe Something Beautiful, then follow up with a painting activity. That's happening at 11 a.m. tomorrow. It's for kids kindergarten through 8th grade. And today is the First Friday Art Walk. And at the Kodiak History Museum, you can meet with and see Kodiak artists Mariah Stapleton, Susan Malutin, and David Tucker. They will share everything about their respective artistic specialties, which include weaving, fur sewing, and illustrating. That starts at 5 p.m. today through 5:30 for the presentation, and then they'll be there till 7 with a Q&A and artist demonstrations. That's completely free. Starts at 5 p.m. at the Kodiak History Museum. Also, as part of the Art Walk, the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge will be hosting Hannah Scholl. She is the artist who made their new mural. That's happening 5 to 7 p.m. as well. There will be activities, refreshments, and giveaways. So you can visit one and then the other, the refuge, and then go across the street to the History Museum. And also going on at the National Wildlife Refuge, or actually on Near Island, they're having their Walk for the Wild. That's happening tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and you meet at the Near Island North End Trailhead. It's an interactive nature walk. It's fun for all ages, and there will be prizes as well. Again, that's tomorrow, starting at 10 a.m. at the Near Island North End Trailhead, the Walk for the Wild. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is providing a remembrance workshop this coming weekend, both days. It's from noon to 4 p.m. at Rooted for both days. Participants will create a small book or collage or montage to commemorate a loved one. You don't have to be an artist, and all supplies will be provided. The workshop is led by Bonnie Dillard. Call Bonnie at 907-512-5535 for more information. But again, that is both days this weekend, noon to 4 p.m. at Rooted.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
You know, I almost forgot about the dog walk. The Humane Society and Kodiak Animal Shelter have a dog walk happening at 10 a.m. tomorrow. It's for community members and their dogs. In addition to a choice of shorter or longer walk, there's a pet costume contest and door prizes, the fun photo booth, and refreshments. You can register still at kodiakanimalshelter.org or call for more information. Call Linda Lance at 907-654-5717, but the dog walk tomorrow.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the October 6th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. If you haven't figured it out by now, I love this time of year. Dramatic sunrises and sunsets, beautiful skies ranging from azure blue to stormy clouds backlit by the sun. And the colors. The colors of autumn here are just as magnificent as they are anywhere else. Sometimes not in towering trees, but in the grasses and the alpine plants that are only a couple of inches tall. Like the brilliant red of the alpine bearberry plants. And then there are the willows, ranging in color from golden yellow to apricot to reddish orange. And of course, everyone's favorite winter bellwether, the fireweed. Although our fireweed didn't flower much this year, it has certainly made up for it in color this fall. Normally we say that when the fireweed goes to cotton, we are 6 weeks from winter. Since we didn't have a lot of plants going to cotton this year, maybe we'll skip right by winter. What do you think? Although the recent winds have stripped some of the trees of their leaves, there's still lots of color out there, and I hope you get out to enjoy it over the next week. Saturday, enjoy lots of color, imagination, and amazing sewing skills at the Quilt Show. Brought to us by the Bear Paw Quilters Guild, the show is at the St. Mary's Gym and runs from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday only. Also on Saturday, take Fido for a walk to benefit the Humane Society at the Dog Walk. Registration starts at 9:30 a.m. at the Kodiak College, and the walk begins at 10. Kick off the weekend with a First Friday Art Walk. You can meet the artists and see their work at a variety of locations around town. Check out the details at kodiakarts.org. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.